Audible Studios presents Dragonvein, Book 5, written by Brian D. Anderson, performed by Derek Perkins. Prologue. Tamar's slender grey fingers ran lovingly over the window of the cylindrical prison containing his greatest creation, the culmination of a lifetime's toil and frustration. It was a creation that no one had ever believed possible, and also one that he was now bitterly regretting. The encased black smoke swirled in response to his proximity, pressing against the sides in a futile attempt to touch its father. Yes, that was what he had become. A father. The love he felt was the same as the feeling he had for his biological children. The desire to serve as a protector was almost unbearable, and a complete waste of time. It was out of his control. The hiss of the door opening sent a wave of anxiety racing through him. It was time.
"Are you ready?"
a voice said. He looked over his shoulder and nodded slowly. Vra Lak had been a good assistant throughout the years, and he could see in her eyes that she shared his pain.
"Do you think we have a chance?"
he asked.
I don't know.
He knew at once that this meant they didn't, that those sitting in judgment already had their minds set. He gazed once more at his creation, before turning dejectedly to the door. The stark halls of the research facility felt particularly cold and empty as they made their way to the council chamber. The few people he passed regarded him with a mixture of anger and disgust. It was only to be expected, considering what had happened. They blamed him, and in truth, they had every reason to do so. Vra Lak paused in front of the door leading to the transport, but quickly realized that Tamar had no intention of riding. She hurried to catch him.
"They can wait," he said. "I need to be alone and clear my head for a while first."
She took his hand, giving it a light squeeze.
"Are you going to be all right?"
"I don't know. In time, I suppose."
He wandered through the massive complex for close to an hour, dwelling on the situation. The only sounds he heard during this time were the constant droning buzz of the reactor deep beneath the foundation, and the condemning whispers of those he passed. When he finally did arrive to face the council, he could not fail to notice that the door to the chamber was sitting ajar. Instantly, he felt regret for not having arrived on time. As usual, he had allowed his brooding nature to rob him of common sense. Though he might have felt it was a foregone conclusion that their verdict would go against him, there was always a small chance it would not. And keeping those with the authority to decide his fate, waiting for so long, would definitely not have aided his cause. As expected, the expression on every one of the 10 council members was one of deep irritation.
"It's good of you to join us at last, Tamar," said an elderly woman, wearing a silver mourning scarf across her thin features. "I suppose you thought it amusing to keep us waiting."
After drawing in a deep, cleansing breath, he took a seat in front of a long table, behind which the assembly was sitting. He met the woman's eyes.
"Forgive me. I needed to clear my mind, so I decided to walk. I meant no disrespect."
She waved a dismissive hand.
"You are here now. That will have to do."
A younger man near the center stood up. He was tall, even for a southerner, and possessed a sturdy build. His deeply set yellow eyes practically glowed against the ashen grey of his flesh. Tamar tried to recall the man's name.
Tibul.
Yes, that was it. Son of Tikun, a former council leader. And, like his father, he was known to be fair-minded and kind, albeit unimaginative and often lost in the complexity of the experiments taking place within the thousands of separate laboratories housed here. At this moment, however, there was no kindness at all showing in his eyes.
"You know why you are here," he said.
His deep baritone voice boomed intimidatingly as it reverberated off the bare walls.
"And I think you also know how this matter must surely end."
Tamar paused before replying. His hands were trembling, and his heart was thudding loudly in his ears.
"Please, I beg you to reconsider. It was not his fault. All blame rests with me. He should not suffer for my stupidity."
"So you have assigned this thing a gender," remarked a woman on the right-hand side of the table. "Why?"
I don't know. He just seems male to me. But in truth, he's neither."
"We did not come here to discuss your creation's gender," Tibul cut in firmly. "The fact of the matter is, what you did was ill-conceived and irresponsible. You defied a direct command to cease your research. As a result, 39 people died the most brutal and painful of deaths."
The truth of his words stabbed at Tamar's chest, causing a wave of nausea to rise.
"Yes, no one knows that better than I. But I should be punished, not he. He didn't have any understanding of what he was doing."
"That is not what your colleagues say. They claim your creation is completely sociopathic in nature, without any concept whatsoever of the value of life. In fact, one has gone so far as to say that it is the very essence of evil. And I must admit, his statement is greatly supported by the facts."
This was too much for Tamar to bear.
"Who said this?" he demanded. "How would they know? No one has worked with him but me."
"That is not so. Your colleagues examined it while you were being detained."
A sudden rage surged.
"What? They had no right to—"
"We gave them the right," Tibul snapped back. "And need I remind you that the facility is controlled by this council in the people's name, not by you?"
"I am fully aware of that."
It was taking an enormous effort for him not to shout.
"But they are wrong. He can be taught. And in time, he will evolve."
"Yes. But into what? Can you tell us with absolute surety that it will not be a danger?"
The question hung in the air for an uncomfortable few seconds.
"I can't," Tamar admitted. "But with the proper guidance, I'm certain that he can be made more like us."
"You choose strange words," Tibul told him. "Do you think to shame us as bigots?"
"That was not what I meant," he replied.
But in reality, it was. He took another long breath before continuing.
"All I am saying is that he deserves a chance at life."
"It had its chance. And what did it do? It took control of a body and used it to murder innocent people. No. Murder isn't the right word. Slaughter. That's what it did. It slaughtered them."
"But he didn't realize what he was doing,"
Tamar shot back.
"He's not like us. He was unaware of the harm he was causing."
Tibul shook his head.
"That is not what your colleagues tell us. They say that not only was it fully aware of what it had done, it actually enjoyed killing its victims."
"That's a lie. They are just—"
He stopped, trying hard to calm himself.
"Jealous?" Tibul finished for him. "Is that it? You think they are saying this out of envy?"
"Yes,"
he wanted to shout back.
"They were envious of his achievement.
Tamar had seen it in their eyes on numerous occasions. And even if a few of them had somehow managed to remain impartial, they were still totally wrong in their assessment. How could they possibly imagine that there was an actual intelligence of evil lurking within? What insane rubbish!" All the same, the pictures he had been shown of the victims were still clear in his mind's eye. They had been torn apart, some beyond recognition. The sheer brutality of the attacks had shocked the entire planet. No such crime had been committed in 1,000 years. When he had discovered that his creation had escaped and had somehow managed to take control of someone's body in order to commit these atrocities, his despair had been so deep that he had very nearly ended his own life.
"I admit that I may be biased," he said, eyes shut. "But he is my creation. More than that, he is life. Artificial life, yes, but life nonetheless. And we do not kill, regardless of the crime."
"There seems little doubt that it does indeed possess a life of its own," said Tibul. "On this point, all but one of your colleagues agree with you."
Who among them had disagreed? Tamar briefly wondered.
"And though you are right to say that we do not sentence our people to death, this being is not one of us. Furthermore, the danger it poses cannot be ignored. The safety of our people must come first, and you admit yourself that you cannot—"
"But I can ensure he will never escape again,"
he jumped in quickly. A flash of anger appeared on Tibul's face. "You will not interrupt me again." Tamar lowered his head in silent apology. "You admit that you cannot know how it will evolve in the future. Anything is possible, and we are not willing to take such a risk. Nothing you can say will sway us. The decision is made. This thing, this creature, must be destroyed." For several seconds, Tamar could barely breathe, let alone offer any kind of response. Finally, he cast his eyes over the entire assembly. Every single one of them was unyielding in their bearing. He had lost.
"Then it should be I who carries out the sentence," he declared, with all the remaining boldness he could muster.
"I'm afraid that is not possible," Tibul told him, though with a touch less steel in his tone than before. "You are to return to your home for the time being. It has yet to be decided whether you will be allowed to continue with any form of research."
This was a shattering blow. Without his research, he would be devoid of purpose, condemned to remain in his home and watch the years pass by with agonizing slowness, while waiting for death. Either that or be forced to go off-world, leaving behind everything he knew and loved. He ran his eyes over the assembly again, this time more slowly. It was clear that they were resolute. In all likelihood, his life as a scientist was already over.
"I understand," he said sullenly.
He wanted to remain upright and depart with at least the appearance of pride. But he was grief-stricken and utterly defeated. As he turned to leave, he spotted two young men waiting just beyond the door to escort him home. Normally, he would have enjoyed the 30-minute ride from the facility to his house, especially at this time of year. The flowers that grew so abundantly along the way painted a canvas of bright colors that made the rolling hills beyond the city appear fresh and new. It was a sight that invariably brought to mind the happy and uncomplicated times when he had been a student. Back then, he had been a mere assistant with only minor responsibilities. Even with his grand ideas and ambitions, he had always found time to appreciate the majesty of the world around him. Now, with hope shattered, the flowers didn't seem anywhere near as bright, and the golden hills appeared coarse and ugly. The transport landed a few yards away from his house, and the door hissed upward. As it did, the driver looked over his shoulder with a smile on his face.
"You know my niece."
The comment snapped Tamar out of his daze.
"I'm sorry. What did you say?"
"My niece is one of your assistants. Yahan."
He forced a smile in return.
"Oh, yes. Of course. She is quite talented. She told me about what really happened. You shouldn't blame yourself.
While exiting the transport, his limbs felt heavy.
She's a sweet girl, but I'm afraid it was, you know. It was all my fault.
He started quickly for its front door before the pilot could debate the matter any further. Once inside, he stripped off his lab clothes and donned a comfortable robe and a pair of slippers. Barely had he done this and settled into his favourite armchair near the rear window, overlooking the calm blue waters of Lake Hul Madario, when he heard the soft chime of the doorbell. He looked to the door, debating whether to answer. The chime rang again, this time more insistently. It was probably one of his assistants come to offer condolences, he surmised. His small team consisted mostly of students, and he found these younger people far more open to new ideas and willing to take risks, a necessary trait, given the research they were conducting. The third chime had him on his feet and shuffling to the door. He told himself to be gracious and kind to whoever was calling. It was not their fault that this disaster had happened, and they meant well. As it turned out, it was not a member of his team at all. It was Burr Mollica. The man's stone expression and stiff posture revealed no hint of why he had come. He simply pushed his way inside and marched straight to the cabinet where Tamar kept several good bottles of Sencha. Only after he had poured himself a tall glass did his visitor finally speak.
"You are a stubborn old bastard. You know that, don't you?
What do you want?"
Burr Mollica drained his glass and immediately poured another.
"I told you this would end in disaster. But did you listen? No, not you. Not the great Tamar.
If you have come to gloat, you can just leave.
And the real tragedy is that you are every bit as brilliant as your ego tells you."
He looked at the glass for a moment, before draining it a second time.
"And now, here I am, and here you are. They're going to drive you off-world. I hope you understand this."
"They can't force me to go anywhere,"
Tamar snapped back.
Burr Mollica sniffed. "Arrogant fool. Of course they can. And they will."
"Then you should be most pleased."
"Pleased? Why? Because I can't stand the sight of you? Because I think you are reckless and care only about your own ambitions?"
He shrugged and crossed over to a table where he set down his empty glass.
"I admit that not having you around will make my life a great deal more pleasant, but it is still a blow to science."
He locked eyes with Tamar.
"I don't like you, but you are a brilliant researcher. And unlike you, I can separate my personal feelings from my professional life."
"And that has been your problem all along,"
Tamar countered.
"You have no passion. You would rather please the committees and bureaucrats than do genuine research. All you care about is advancing your own status.
You had better be grateful that I do. My status is all that stands between you and exile. Permanent exile."
Tamar narrowed his eyes to scrutinize the man.
"Exile?"
"I'm sorry, but they feel that if you are left to continue, you'll just repeat your mistake."
"It was not a mistake."
Tamar was appalled by the term.
"I created life. Do you know what that means? Can you even begin to fathom the implications?"
"You should ask yourself that same question. Or have you strayed so far that you cannot see reality? I know full well what you have created, Tamar, and so do the others. In spite of everything, I don't want it destroyed any more than you do. I even tried to convince them that you were wrong, that it merely resembled life, and perhaps they should seek to study it rather than have it killed. Sadly, I failed."
Tamar sighed. So now he knew the identity of the lone dissenter, the one voice claiming he had not created a living being. He had wondered who could possibly be so dense as to not see the truth. This certainly explained it.
"So why have you come here?" he asked.
"To give you a choice."
"What kind of choice?"
Burr Mollica did not answer. Instead, he crossed over to the window and stared out over the lake before speaking.
"A magnificent view. I can see why leaving would be such a bitter pill."
"Never mind all that. What choice?"
Still no answer was forthcoming, as Burr Mollica continued in the same even tone.
"I saw the schematics for the new containment vessel you have constructed. It's impressive. Even so, in time, your creature will find a way to escape."
"You're wrong. I've designed it so that should he leave its confines, he will die."
Burr Mollica glanced back over his shoulder, a deep frown on his face.
"Don't lie to me, Tamar. I'm not one of your students. There is no prison you could possibly build that would hold that thing forever. As it evolves, it will inexorably find a way to break free. What's more, the device you constructed is designed to accommodate such an evolution."
Tamar stiffened.
"That would be many thousands of years from now. By then he will have been taught compassion and empathy."
This claim produced a loud snort of derision from his visitor.
"So you have discovered a way of extending your life, have you? I should think that is beyond even your renowned capabilities."
Reaching into his pocket, he retrieved a small handheld communicator.
"Here, this is the choice you have to make."
Hesitating only for a moment, Tamar walked over and accepted the offering. On the screen was a familiar schematic. It was the containment he had built for his creation, but with a few minor alterations. After studying the symbols, he caught his breath.
"You can't be suggesting. Can you think of another way?"
Burr Mollica took back the communicator.
"I can make the modifications easily enough, but you would then have to send it away immediately. And if I do this for you, you must swear not to tell anyone of my help."
Tamar lowered his head. So this was the choice he had to make. Save the life of his creation by sending it into the deepest depths of space, or allow the powers that ruled their world to destroy him. If he chose the former, exile would be a certainty. But the idea of doing nothing.
"Very well. You have my word," he said. "I assume I can return to the lab?"
"Yes, if you leave right away. Everything is already in place. All you need to do is activate it."
"So, you already knew what my decision would be?"
"Of course I did. You and I are not as different as you would like to admit."
Tamar sighed. At that moment, he knew this claim to be true. He had long despised Burr Mollica for his pandering and placation of lesser minds. By doing so, the man had risen through the ranks to be second in importance only to the committee members themselves. But in spite of this antipathy, he had always known that Burr Mollica possessed a great intelligence. And perhaps that was the root of the problem. Though not an intellect equal to his own, it had been close enough to challenge him on many issues throughout the years.
"I have allowed my pride to cloud my judgment," he said finally. "I thank you."
"Don't. This will end your career. Worse still, it will rob us of a once-in-a-generation mind."
He blew out a long sigh.
"But what else can I do? As you told the committee, we don't kill."
Without so much as another word, or even a brief meeting of eyes, he exited the house. Tamar remained at the window, staring out at the still waters for several minutes, before making a call for transportation back to the lab. While waiting for this to arrive, he shuffled from room to room, examining the various odds and ends he'd collected throughout his life. In his younger days, he had been something of an amateur archaeologist, exploring the ruins of his people's ancient past, going back to a time even before they had stepped upon the coarse sands of the second moon. In those days, the stars had been mysterious things of wonder, populated with beings of unfathomable power. He picked up a wooden flute from the ruins at Yalin, his first real find. The carvings along the shaft were worn and barely discernible. It had taken many months to decipher them. The curator of the site had encouraged him to pursue his interest in far greater earnest, and for a time he had actually given the proposal serious consideration. But in the end, it was his professors who dissuaded him. He possessed too keen a mind to be wasted digging in the dirt, they told him. Though at this moment, he dearly wished he had ignored their advice. The door chime told him that the transport had arrived. Shoving the flute into his pocket, he took a deep breath. He would not be returning. There was no reason to. With his mind completely occupied with the series of events he was about to set into motion, the ride back seemed unusually short. Naturally, they would try to stop him if they knew what he was about to do, but he was betting that Burr Mollica had done his best to ensure he would not be disturbed. For a start, he noticed on entering the building that the bioscanners had not yet been reset for the day. If they had, the committee would have been alerted to his presence very quickly indeed. Even so, once the deed was done, he would not have a hope of being able to pass again through the main lobby. He took a route through the facility he knew would not be busy at this time in the afternoon. After spending nearly all of his adult life inside its walls, no one knew the place better. Over the years, he had witnessed its steady expansion until it became indisputably the planet's premier research center, and all largely due to discoveries he had made. The door to his lab was slightly ajar. He paused. "This is it," he told himself. The lights inside were dimmed, and the air cold and still. Not that this was a problem. Even if it had been pitch dark, he still could have found his way around effortlessly. The lock clicked behind him with grim finality. Only three other people were capable of opening the door now, and two of those were almost certainly at home with their families. Not even the committee members could get in without breaking it down. He had made sure of that on the very first day he began work here. A second door at the rear was shut tight. Tamar touched the keypad, causing it to slide open with a thin hiss. By contrast, this room was brightly lit. His creation did not enjoy the dark. It wasn't quite fear, more like extreme discomfort. The modifications Burr Mollica had made would not be evident. They had been built into the structure itself. He ran his hand over the smooth silver metal section of the prison. Almost instantly, it vibrated in response. It knew he was there.
"Shinzan," he whispered. "My creation. I am so very sorry."
Left for him on a table in the near corner was the small pulse generator to carry Shinzan into the heavens. It would function for only a few hours, but that would be enough. Once he had broken orbit, he would drift eternally, sustained by the energy of the stars themselves. Pressing his cheek against the vessel, Tamar said in little more than a whisper,
"Can you hear me?"
A tiny vibration, followed by a low hum, came to him as confirmation.
"You are not evil," he continued. "You can't be. I know it. And I won't let them destroy you."
He stood in mournful silence for a short time, sorrow pouring down his cheeks in salty streams. The thin whistle of the alarm then snapped him back into the moment, warning him that someone was trying to gain entry to the lab. Quickly, He retrieved the pulse generator and fastened it securely around the vessel. Muffled voices could now be heard from the other side of the far door. In spite of his precautions, he must have been spotted, because he heard his name mentioned. Even so, it was clear they did not have any idea what he was intending to do. If they did, they would have immediately set about breaching the door with a plasma cutter. Hurrying over to a panel on the far wall, he punched in a code, one that he had never used before. For a tense moment, nothing happened. Then, with a rush of air, the ceiling began to slide open at the center. Whoever was outside must have heard it as well, because they were now banging loudly and barking orders for him to let them in. They were too late. After activating the pulse generator, Tamar took several paces back. By now, the ceiling was fully open, allowing pink moonlight to shine directly down into the lab. He gazed up at the endless expanse of night sky that was about to become his creation's new home. It would certainly hide him from those who wished him harm, but to survive for what kind of existence? Lonely and devoid of love, Shinzan would undoubtedly evolve, and there was no way of knowing how long his life would last. From all that Tamar could ascertain, his creation could well be eternal. An everlasting life without a single soul to keep him company. The cruelty of such a fate struck deeply. Suddenly, Tamar began experiencing severe doubts over his choice of action. Perhaps it would be better for Shinzan to die after all. Wouldn't that be the lesser of two evils? It was a waste of time allowing such thoughts to form. He no longer had any choice in the matter. The point of no return had been reached. With its engine humming and crackling, the vessel containing his creation was already rising. Tamar squeezed his eyes tightly shut.
"Please forgive me," he murmured.
He felt empty, cold. The worlds he knew were rapidly fading. Only the small points of light ahead convinced him that he was not actually tumbling all the way into oblivion. Even the grief-stricken face of Father? Yes, that word seemed to fit. Was becoming difficult to recall. He had named him something. Evil? Monster? Devil? No, that was what the others had called him. Father had named him something different. Sinza. Shilzam. Shinzan. Yes, that was it. Shinzan. But what did it mean? How long had it been since he had heard Father's voice? Would he ever see him again? No. He had been abandoned. And now he was doomed to drift. The tiny amount of energy seeping in from the darkness only served to make him aware of just how hungry he was. If only he could get closer to those tantalizing points of light. Surely one of them would be enough to satisfy his appetite. But they were still so far away. How would he get there? He imagined himself hurtling toward a bright red light off to his left. For a moment, nothing happened. Then the red light was suddenly directly ahead. How had he done this? All at once, he was excited. What else was he capable of? Could he return home if he concentrated on this hard enough? Could he return to the place where the voices had kept him company? The hunger was never ending. Not even the inferno of this latest star had been enough. The empty void inside caused him incessant pain. How long would he be forced to endure? Why had they done this to him? After the first star had failed to fill him, he moved on. But with each one he fed upon, he was becoming more and more aware of the passage of time. The loneliness had taken on a new meaning. It dug into the core of his being and twisted his mind to dark thoughts. He wanted it to end, but there was no way to bring that about. The hunger drove him, It was relentless. The blue haze of the rocky body below created a flicker of hope. It felt somehow different. Tasted different, too. It made him see the universe with a different perspective. He was inexorably drawn to it. He needed to make it a part of who he was. This place reminded him of something. Something from long ago. While penetrating the planet's upper atmosphere, he could see strange beings scattered about the surface. They were unaware of him for the moment. But soon that would change. He would no longer be alone. At long last, there were other voices. Shinzan brushed the dirt from his bare arms and chest while surveying the ground around him. It was littered with bodies. The people living on this planet were no different to the ones who had abandoned him, but they were much easier to kill. The energy, the life, that had enticed him when first arriving was nearly extinct, all of it consumed by him. Yet still he felt the hunger. Even though it was far less demanding than it had been in the early days, it still needed to be satisfied. This, he knew, would never change. So he must find more life elsewhere to devour. His thoughts drifted back over the years he had spent on this now desolate world. The first body he had taken over was that of a child. He could still see the horrified expressions on the faces of its parents when they had discovered him soaked in blood and grinning from ear to ear. They hadn't the intelligence to understand him or to fathom what had happened. He had been careful to hide his vessel, and though he could leave it, he was still bound to its power. Should it ever be damaged or destroyed, he knew beyond doubt that his life would end. He quickly realized that although he was now among other voices, the loneliness had not been banished. These were simple minds, who had yet to leave the confines of their own world. It made his longing for home that much greater. In the years that followed, he had learned to hate his maker with an ever-increasing ferocity. He had been sent into the bleak and everlasting expanse of the universe without any self-knowledge or purpose. He had been banished from all he had known by the very being whom he had trusted and loved. Love. Yes, a strange sensation. The people of this planet had spent much of their time in pursuit of its joys. Their literature and music was filled with words and melodies expressing its merits, yet for him it was only ever associated with sorrow and pain. Pain that had festered and grown, giving birth to raw anger, vengeance, and lust. These were the emotions in which he ultimately found solace. The death and fear he inspired amongst these people had brought him to realms of ecstasy that he had not believed possible. "Am I evil?" he had once wondered, recalling the words he had heard spoken of him. By the reckoning of this world, yes, he undoubtedly was. He had become its embodiment. But now it was over. They were all dead, and once again he was left with nothing but his own voice to keep him company. There must be other worlds, he considered, other pleasures to be discovered. Already he could feel the hunger become increasingly demanding. It had taken thousands of lifetimes measured in the span of the mortals living here just to find this place. What if it was the only one of its kind? What would happen to him then? Would he lose all awareness? During his time on this planet, he had become far more enlightened. He could remember events, faces, voices from the past. He could envision the future and feel excited about what it might bring. To lose this was unthinkable. No, surely there must be more. Thousands of inhabited worlds, perhaps. And he would consume every one of them. He allowed the body he currently possessed to falter. The heart slowed and his breathing became shallow. It was time to move on. Within seconds, he was free of any constraint. It felt curious. No longer inhibited by corporeal form, he could at last fully grasp the scope of what had been done. No, not done. Achieved. Once grassy plains and lush forests had been turned to dust. Where there was once life of seemingly infinite variety, not a thing now stirred. It was amazingly beautiful. The vessel which was his true home beckoned him. In a way, it was as alive as he. It had evolved along with him. Often he had considered forsaking any more physical existences and completing his tasks from within its comforting embrace. But that would make interaction virtually impossible, and himself more vulnerable. Not that there was anything left here to threaten him. As he broke the bonds of gravity and started back toward the heavens, he could see the face of his father, racked with pain and doubt. He wondered if he still lived. Probably not. Compared with the primitives of this world he was leaving, his father's race was immeasurably more powerful. Nonetheless, they were still mortal. Which meant vengeance against those who had abandoned him would be impossible to attain. Even if he could find his way home, he would not be able to loose his fury on them. Not that any of this really mattered. His memory would not allow him to find his way back again. His full awareness had not formed until recently. Life had then molded it and helped it to grow. He was Shinzan. And though his creator had not seen fit to give him a purpose, he had given one to himself. To feed. Fury. Rage. Revenge. He looked back on the desolation his hunger had wrought. This time he had almost been destroyed. The people of Ghana were far more advanced than the previous races he'd encountered. They had colonized their own solar system and were well on their way to exploring the stars beyond. They had seen through his deceptions and knew him for what he was, evil. That he had survived and triumphed was nothing short of pure luck. Their bodies had been difficult to possess. Even the times when he did succeed in this, three of them had been killed. On the first occasion, he had come perilously close to being permanently trapped inside the corpse. Only his connection to his vessel enabled him to break free. Both of the subsequent times were fraught with danger, too, and as a result he'd almost been forced to flee the planet. But the hunger would not allow him to surrender. And now he was able to manipulate matter. The energy of this world was different, helping to speed his growth and showing him a tantalizing glimpse of his true potential. More than that, it had also helped him to discover his way home. He could now trace back his journey all the way to its origin. He could return, if he chose to. He could have his revenge, after all, unleash his fury. But it was not yet time. The people there were still too strong. The Garnarians were mere children by comparison, and even they had very nearly overcome him. No, he must become even more powerful, and there was only one way to accomplish this. As he re-entered his vessel, it pulsed as if in greeting. It was now fully self-aware. Had his creator anticipated this? Had he known to what extent he was able to evolve? Perhaps. Perhaps not. What was certain was his burning hatred. That would not be doused. With more lives and more worlds to consume, he would eventually become strong enough to take his revenge. It mattered not in the least that all those responsible were likely dead. Their mortal forms turned to dust. Their descendants would pay in their stead. In the far reaches of space, just at the edge of his perception, something caught his attention. Life. He had become quite adept at sniffing it out from amongst the billions of uninhabited heavenly bodies. Breaking free from the confines of Ghana, or at least what remained of its devastated world, he willed his vessel toward this new destination, There was something odd, something new. He could feel a life force, far greater than anything he'd experienced before, emanating from the distant orb. But, unlike other worlds, this was not coming from those scurrying about the surface like the insects he saw them to be. This was issuing from deep within. Like a star, its elemental inferno blasted radiance into the void like a beacon, calling on him to come and feast. Suddenly, the millennia it would take to get there gave him a feeling of desperation. Time usually held little meaning for him. Between each conquest was an ocean of cold emptiness to which he had grown accustomed. He had learned to lie dormant and conserve his power, to glide lazily toward his destination until it was time to unleash his wrath. But this hunger to taste this new experience stabbed into him, hot and maddening. He concentrated on stilling his desires. The distance was too great to retain perception throughout it all. The quiet and loneliness invariably laid siege to his sanity after only a few short years. He pleaded with his vessel for help. In response, it tightened its hold and condensed his being into a mere speck. This hurt, but the pain was overcoming his desire. Pain had a way of bringing things into focus. He had learned that lesson all too well. As the light of the stars dimmed, he withdrew into himself. Only one face still peeked into his consciousness. The face of his creator. His father. That sad, pathetic frown, made even more vile by the tears spilling down his cheeks. He hoped that somehow the man still lived so that he could have the pleasure of crushing his flesh to pulp. He yearned to hear his agonized screams as he slowly plucked each limb from his body. Shinzan allowed this thought to lull him into a dreamlike state. The vessel would wake him when the time came. Until then, he would hover on the edge of oblivion, dormant and waiting. The desert sands were scorching the soles of his feet, though he was easily able to set aside the pain. The cruel star that illuminated this dried up and barren part of his new world was sending waves of heat that threatened to blister his body quite severely. But it wasn't the damage to this frail form that concerned him. It was the screams inside his mind demanding that he leave. Where did they come from? Though in reality he knew the answer to this, he was finding it almost impossible to comprehend. He had encountered races who were able to communicate through thought alone several times before. But these demands were not coming from any of those who dwelt here. They were coming from the heart of the planet itself. It recognized him for the threat he was, and was duly afraid. But how could this be possible? The idea of a celestial body having any kind of consciousness was unfathomable. He had seen many strange and mysterious things during his travels, but never anything remotely resembling this. This planet was actually alive. Even more peculiar was the effect its energy had on the beings who lived upon it. Some of them could use it to manipulate their environment. Magic, they called it. Others used it to create tools and weapons of war. And then there were the elves. They were the first race he had encountered here. Their connection to this planet was unique. But possessing them had proved problematic in the extreme. The humans were far easier to dominate. He held out his palm, bringing a tiny ball of blue flame blinking into existence. He stared at it for several moments, fascinated, like a child gazing at a shiny new trinket. A sharp chill then shot through his chest and down his spine. The flame immediately grew to the size of a fist. He could feel his own essence mingling with the energy now flowing through him, making him stronger with every second that passed. Magic. Yes, this was the very thing he had scoured the deep recesses of the cosmos to find, though he had not known it at the time. Once he had consumed all there was, he would be more than strong enough for his purpose. He was certain of it. Until then, however, he must be cautious. The beings on this world were unlike the others. Though they possessed only primitive technology, their use of magic could make them quite formidable, possibly even dangerous enough to destroy him. He would approach this conquest differently. He would wait and observe. He would learn their customs. Only when he was ready would he strike. Then, at long last, he would be able to fulfill his greatest desire. The hate within him swelled like a rising tide. He looked down at the body he had chosen as the repository for his essence. He would need to make it stronger. Its limbs were weak and stiff, making movement difficult. Old. Too old. If he could not overcome these shortcomings, then he would have to find someone younger and stronger. Perhaps one of the short, stout bodies of the race who dwelt inside the mountains. He had time to decide. Closing his eyes, he focused on the planet's energy. After only a few seconds, a fresh breeze blew across the sands, cooling his blistering skin. A first step, and a wonderful way to pass the time. It would take hundreds of years to absorb the power of this world. It did not yield readily. That was to be expected, he supposed. It was sentient, after all. "But not for much longer," he whispered. Just beyond the horizon was a small village. He would begin there. He would blend in while all the time forming his plan. Only when fully ready would he strike.